Welcome to the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga from Cleveland.com. And today's big news is that Indian slugger Jim Thome has been elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame by the Baseball Writers Association of America. Thome got 89.8% of the vote in his first year on the ballot and will be enshrined in Cooperstown alongside Chipper Jones, Vladimir Guerrero, and Trevor Hoffman, as well as Veterans Committee selections Alan Trammell and Jack Morris on July 29th. Thome becomes the 13th player inducted as a Cleveland Indian, joining legends such as Bob Feller and Larry Doby. His 612 career home runs rank 8th all-time and 4th for a left-handed hitter. Indian shortstop Omar Vizquel fell short of the necessary 75% of the vote to reach the Hall, but Vizquel got 37% of the vote and will appear on the ballot again next year. Later on, we'll be joined by Cleveland.com's Paul Hoynes, who covered Jim Thome's entire career with the Indians, and later with teams such as the Twins and the White Sox. But first, let's hear from Thome himself, who received a call from Cooperstown yesterday, at home, surrounded by his family, and later on he talked with reporters about what it means to become a Hall of Famer. First thing Thome talked about was his longevity and what made him able to stay in the game for more than 20 seasons while performing at such a high level.
I think for me, you know, with dealing with my back and the fact that I got to DH in the latter stages, I think understanding my routine and truly knowing that routine and communication, I think, as a young player, you know, you're kind of built to, okay, I'm playing. And we all do every day. We're ready to play. But I think the communication later in my career and understanding when my body needed a break and the fact that, you know, we are made to push and go as far and long as you can, I think the communication factor later and understanding my routine, my back routine that kept me on the field for all those years. And truly the communication with your, you know, with your trainers and the fact that what being proactive and getting out ahead of things before they would happen. And I was with, you know, I was very fortunate to be around some great trainers that truly cared about their players.
Later, Thome was asked about his relationship with former Indians hitting coach and manager Charlie Manuel, who pretty much nurtured Tomey's career through the minor leagues and on through Cleveland, and then later on in Philadelphia.
As special as it gets. I mean, this is a father figure. This guy was my guy. I mean, I would not be here if it wasn't for Charlie, you know, and I know he's very humble, and he'll say, hey, the player's got to ultimately do it, but I will tell you there was many, many days that he pounded his fist, wanting to keep me at the big league level. There were days when I was in AAA that he told me I wasn't ready to go to the big league. So from that point, I knew and trusted him like a father. But it was more than just the coach, hitting instructor, manager. There was, we had this bond together that was very special. And I feel the lucky one because I embraced it. And I guess also wisely, you know, took it and ran with it because of what he gave. He gave his time. He gave his passion. He gave his life to the game of baseball. And I was the one that reaped the rewards for many, many years. Even when we weren't together, which wasn't very much, but when we, you know, when I wasn't, he was always that guy I could go to and call and just kind of ease your mind as a friend, ambassador, instructor, all of the above.
Thome was asked about the Hall of Fame itself and which displays and artifacts he was most looking forward to seeing when he visits for enshrinement weekend.
Oh gosh, there were so many, many things that I think walking through the front door gives you chills enough, and then you see the history of the game, the basement and putting on the white gloves and touching Babe Ruth's items and Lou Gehrig and, you know, seeing the different gloves early in the stages of baseball and seeing how the game has evolved. And then the new modern great players that are now, you know, like, I think the Hall of Fame is so magical. If you're a baseball fan and you truly understand it, want to understand it, I think that was the driving force to take the 500 and 600 baseball to there, because it's where it should have been. It's where it should be. You've got all these great artifacts and items that it's, you know, as you well know, it's the greatest place there is. And I think one day doesn't do it justice. You need to spend two or three to fully understand all the great things that's in that place. It's just so special.
Certainly in the months ahead and the weeks leading up to the enshrinement, we will be hearing a lot more from Jim Thome, and I'm pretty certain the Indians themselves are excited about the honor. Later on today, they'll be unveiling their 2018 ballpark giveaways, and those should feature at least one item Hall of Fame Jim Thome related on the schedule. But now it's time to check in with Paul Hoynes and get his take on Jim Thome and Omar Vizquel, and even later on we'll talk a little bit about which Indians could someday be joining Thome in the Hall of Fame. All right, we're joined by Cleveland.com Tribe beat reporter Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, the Baseball Writers Association of America has voted, and Jim Thome is a member of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Just what's your immediate reaction to hearing that news and to knowing that, you know, a guy who you covered for so many seasons with the Indians and had such an impact on the franchise is going to be enshrined in Cooperstown?
You know, I think it's great, Joe. I mean, it's well deserved, and it's you know, a testament to a guy that you know, kind of did a couple things and did them very well. I mean, when you think of Jim Thome, you don't think of a defensive player. You think of a guy that hits the ball a long way, and he did that for like 22 years. You know, 612 home runs, eighth most in you know, in history. He drew the seventh most walks, struck out the second most times in history. You know, he's the Indians' franchise leader in homers, walks, and second in RBI. So, you know, this for a 13th round pick, a guy that, you know, really started his career in extended spring training after his first spring training, because the Indians didn't think he was good enough to put him on a minor league club. And he's come a long way. So, you know, good for Jimmy, good for his family, and he's a good dude, man. He never changed. He's one of those guys that, you know, when you met him as a rookie and you saw him after he'd played for 20 years in the big leagues, he never changed. He's a good man.
You talk about that consistency, but, you know, Thome points to his first meeting with Charlie Manuel and you know, a tip that Charlie Manuel gave him early on about getting close to the plate and opening up his hips and sort of transforming the way that he was able to hit the ball, and his career just sort of took off after that point. Is it funny to think that, you know, one tip from one hitting coach somewhere, you know, 25, you know, 30 years ago launched the career of a Hall of Famer like that?
Yeah, I mean, one, you know, all it takes is one thing, you know, but, you know, obviously you can make, you know, all the suggestions in the world, but you have to be able to, the guy you're making the suggestion to has to translate that and make it work for him. And, you know, Jimmy was kind of a, you know, Charlie always said he was a chicken wing hitter. You know, he kind of went to left center field. He had power, but, you know, that's where he was trying to hit the ball. And by moving his back foot closer to the plate, that opened up his hips and opened up the whole field for him. And he started to pull the ball. And he started to pull the ball to center field, but he started to use the whole field. And that's when his power really came into play. And then I think another big thing, Joe, was when he went from third to first base in I believe 1995 when or no 1997 when they got Matt Williams to play third base and they moved Jimmy to first. You know, he could concentrate a little bit more on offense, and he really worked on driving the ball and pulling the ball, and you know, because defense had always been a big concern for him at third base, and I think you know, so that relieved a little of the pressure when he went to first.
Yeah, it's funny how you talk about, you know, back then 1997 an infielder moving positions, and the same things. It's cyclical. It's cycles. You look at a Carlos Santana, a guy who's you know making $20 million a year now because of that move from catcher to third to first, and it's the same things keep popping up in over your years of covering the Indians. The names and faces are different, but the things happen the same way, right?
Yeah, you know, and I think everyone has, like, I think people have a preconceived condition that, okay, if you come up with, you're only going to play one position your whole career. If you come up as a catcher, you're going to be a catcher your whole career. If you come up as a third baseman, that's where you're going to play. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes you're Brooks Robinson, you know. But other times, guys are going to move. And if you can hit and you have some, you know, athletic ability, you know, and maybe you're struggling at one spot. Well, and if a team has a hole at another spot, they're going to put you there and see if you can play there. And, you know, I think to be able to move around like that, you have to be able to hit. And obviously, Tommy and Santana can both swing the bat.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, the number that got Jim Tomey into the Hall of Fame, obviously, is the 612 home runs. You know, nobody who's voting or looking at the results is going to say a guy who hit 612 home runs and did it in a, you know, without any sort of doubt of performance enhancing drugs or anything like that, you know, throughout his career, a clean 612 home runs is an automatic Hall of Famer. Did you think he was a first ballot Hall of Famer? Is that something that's a surprise to you?
That's a little bit of a surprise. I thought, you know, that was going to be tough, but I think, you know, Joe, this was a good ballot for him because, you know, look at Bonds. You know, Bonds is still on there. Manny Ramirez, big time power hitters, guys like, you know, and they have that steroid cloud over them. And I think Jimmy comes in, like you said, you know, with not a wisp of steroid use. He played right through that whole, you know, era, and you know, no positive tests, nothing like that. And I think, you know, people looked at those numbers and said, okay, you know, this is the real deal here. We can vote for this guy. And you know, unfortunately, you know, guys like Fred McGriff kind of get, you know, kind of lost in the backwash of that. But you know, Chipper Jones, you know, got the most votes in this class, and he had almost over 460 home runs. So, you know, Guerrero hit a lot of home runs, and both, you know, those guys, and, you know, Jones, Guerrero, Tomey, you know, all big time hitters get in, you know, and along with closer Trevor Hoffman got in.
So really the power numbers for Tomey, 612 home runs, we all know it. And everyone has their own memory of Jim Tomey in an Indians uniform hitting a sort of a memorable home run, the 511-foot blast to center field off of Kansas City, the shot onto Utah Street in Baltimore. Where were you for those most memorable Jim Tomey home runs? From your personal perspective, where were you watching those ones from? Take us through those and even the home run in game five of the ALCS in 95.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of my, you know, I was at the Kansas City game when he hit it out of the park in center field. The home run, and I'm trying to think in 95, I don't, you know, I was at the game, but I don't remember that home run. The home run I remember is when they were playing the Yankees at Old Yankee Stadium. And it was, I think, in maybe the ALCS in 97, mm-hmm. and David Cone was on the mound, and the Yankees had a 5-0 lead or a 5-1 lead, and Tommy hit a grand slam into the upper tank in right field. And old Yankee Stadium, when the fans got into it, that thing rocked. You could feel the mm-hmm. press box shake. And there was no, that ballpark went quiet. It went dead quiet. The Yankees came back and won it. But that's the home run that stands out to me that he hit. It was just like a monster shot. It got out in 2 seconds, and it had just shut, you know, like 70,000 people up. That's the one I remember.
It was the silencer. It was Tomy silencing the crowd. As far as does he get enough credit for his glove work, or is that something that, you know, is, you know, didn't help him or hurt him in terms of getting in the Hall?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, he was an average fielder. I don't think he wasn't a Gold Glover. I remember Hargrove saying, you know, if Jimmy did make a mistake or made an error, it never bothered him. He never worried about it. He just moved on, you know, and that's the best way to do it, because, you know, he's not making his money with his glove. He's going to make it with his bat, you know, but he, you know, he worked hard at it. I remember as a third baseman, he worked so hard. I mean, when the Indians trained in Winter Haven, and Buddy Bell, you know, was their infield coach, and Buddy, you know, was a Gold Glove third baseman. You know, him and Jimmy would be on the backfields every day, working and working and working it. And you know, it was not for lack of hard work that Jimmy Tomy, you know, was not a great fielder. I mean, he was an average fielder, a good major league fielder, but, you know, I mean, that wasn't going to put him in the Hall of Fame.
As far as his place sort of in Indians history, he has a statue in the outfield there at Progressive Field, and that's a source of, you know, sort of debate among fans and people, you know, observers. What's your take on giving Tomy a statue? The other guys who have statues are Hall of Famers as well. Was it premature to put the statue out there in 2014, or do you think it helped the case?
Well, you know, when he left, before he left in 2002, they had made him a promise that they were going to, you know, Mark Shapiro, I think it's made him a promise or some kind of promise that they were going to build a statue for him. And I think that was obviously an enticement to get him to stay. He didn't stay, but I think they still wanted to do that. And I think that's what led to it, that was part of the driving force behind the statue. But the one thing that always impressed me about Tomy, you know, when he left, you know, he caught so much grief, you know. I don't know, people can, all of a sudden, you know, he was like, this guy said, I'll never leave. You know, he had, you know, all these people were coming up with these quotes saying, I'll never leave Cleveland. You're going to have to rip the uniform off my back. And I never remember him saying any quotes like that. And I was covering him every day. But, you know, all this kind of rancor surfaced. And every time he came back, you know, whether, you know, it was with an interleague game with the Phillies or with, you know, the White Sox or the Twins, and it was terrible. You know, the fans, I thought, treated him terrible. They booed him. It was just, you know, they really got on him hard. And every time, you know, we would go up and talk to Tomy, and he always took the high road. He goes, hey, I left, they can say what they want. You know, he didn't rip the fans. He didn't get mad. He just understood. And I think eventually when he came back maybe at the end of the 2011 season when they brought him back, mm-hmm. and, you know, he hit the home run in his first game back, I think that kind of eased some of the tensions. That's how I feel. And I thought he handled it. He handled the whole situation after he left. I thought he handled it great. I mean, the thing that was funny tonight on the conference call, you know, every city he went to, he loved, you know. He loved Philadelphia. He loved Minnesota. He loved Chicago. And he feels the same way about Cleveland. I mean, I know some fans still hold a grudge, but, hey, when you got a chance to – you play all your career to be a free agent. And if you don't think the team that your team is giving you enough money or giving you know that you think there's something better out in free agency. You got to take a chance. I mean, you got to go for it. And I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all.
Yeah, you know, like you said, he really sort of handled everything really well coming back, and everything subsequent to that, you know, the statue dedication and the Hall of Fame enshrinement last year or 2016, you know, it was all first class. It was very well, you know, conducted himself, and it was really you come to expect that from Jim Thome in dealing with him. So, you know, the obvious question now, the big next question is, who's the next Indian that you can see possibly being enshrined in Cooperstown in the Hall of Fame? Does Omar Vizquel have the chance to get in on the ballot? I know you wrote about, you know, that's going to be a struggle for him. What more does Corey Kluber need to do in order to get his name on consideration for something like that? Is a third Cy Young a guarantee for Kluber in Cooperstown? Could Francisco Lindor or Jose Ramirez, they're years and years off, but could they see themselves at some point in Cooperstown? What do you think the chances are of the next Indian being inducted into Cooperstown?
Well, I think, obviously it's Omar. You know, he's on the ballot. And, I thought he had a great showing vote-wise today. 37% in your first year, and I think that was a great building, a great spot to build off of. You know, when you look at guys like Trammell and some other shortstops that have, debuted on the ballot, they didn't get anywhere near that. So I think, it's going to take a while, I think, but, he received 156 votes, out of I think, 422 ballots cast, it looks like maybe that log jam is going to, with the steroid guys, is starting to it looks like maybe, like Bonds and Clemens, their vote totals, I mean, they kind of stayed the same this year. So that doesn't look like that's going to be an issue. Maybe the voters are going to move past that. And I think I don't think he's, maybe not next year, but I think, Omar's got nine more years here on the ballot. And, I think he's got a great chance to get into Cooperstown. I think he deserves it. I don't buy the fact. I don't buy the defensive metrics that say, that point to so many shortstops that are better than him that I don't think they were. I mean, I watched this guy for 11 years. I think he was the best shortstop I've ever seen. I mean, okay, he's not. He played in an era when, shortstops were expected to hit 30 to 40 home runs, drive in 100 runs. He's not that kind of player.
Well, they were also 6'3" and 220 pounds.
Yeah, and you can't penalize a guy for that. You got to look at what he did. I mean, I just think 11 gold gloves. You shouldn't be penalized because you played until you were 45. If you played till you were 45, that's because you were good enough to play till you were 45, and people still wanted you around. I mean,
and he's what? 300 hits shy of 3,000, something like that?
Yeah, over 2,800 hits. Not bad for a guy that, started his career getting the bat knocked out of his hand in Seattle. So, I think this was a good showing. I know his fans probably aren't, would have loved to see him go in with Thome, but this is a good start for him. I think it's going to be a gradual thing, but I think eventually he gets in there.
What about Kenny Lofton's chances? I know he would have to go the route of the that Alan Trammell and Jack Morris, took to the Hall. It would be through that the Veterans Committee or whatever the Modern Era Committee is what they call it now.
Yeah, there's three different era, veteran committees, and yeah, he would have to go through that committee, and I think he's got a chance. I just wish he would have, and I think he's got a good chance. I think people. No, he kind of got slighted on the BBWA ballot. He was on there for 1 year, didn't get it, you know, came on and when Bonds and Sosa and Clemens, they were all made their appearance, their first appearance on the ballot. And he kind of got, you know, he just got lost in the shuffle and the chaos of all that. And but if you look at his numbers, I mean, he's comparable to Reigns, you know, who got in last year. He's a guy that deserves a second look, a long look. And I was really encouraged by, you know, the Veterans Committee in December voting, you know, Morris and Trammell in, you know, because they haven't voted a player that's been alive since 2001. You know, it's been either executives or managers or you know, some deceased players. And so these guys, you know, we saw these guys play. So, you know, and I thought they deserved. I voted for both those guys. So I'm happy those guys got in. And I think, you know, I think eventually, you know, Kenny will get another shot. I hope he does.
What? How long would he have to wait before he's up for consideration by that committee? Do you have any idea?
It would be at least 2 years, I think. The next time would be probably 2019.
Okay. So as far as current Indians, Corey Kluber can a third Cy Young, you know, lock up a spot in Cooperstown for Corey Kluber?
Well, it wouldn't hurt. I think that would help him. You know, it all depends. You know, I mean, you know, he's kind of got a late start on his career, and you know, he's had four great seasons here, four seasons where he's put up big innings, you know, big strikeout totals, and as the age is probably working against him a little bit, 31, 32, but you know, if he can stay healthy, you know, and put, you know, I don't know if he's going to win, you know, does he have to pitch 240 innings every year? I that would help, but, you know, I would think that you probably watch his workload now. But, yeah, I don't see any reason why not. If he can stay healthy and he maintain his velocity, you know, he works hard, and, you know, if he can – and you know, whatever happened to him last year at the end of the season – and maybe that was just, you know, okay, that was a tweak. But I think he should, he's got a chance. But, you know, he certainly has set the stage for that, Joe. I mean, two Cy Youngs in 4 years. What, he finished third third and ninth in the years he didn't win it. So, you know, he's on the right track for sure. And, you know, Ramirez and Lindor, two great years so far, two and a half for Lindor, two great years for Ramirez, but there's a long way to go. Let's wait to see how that goes. I mean, if they keep playing like this for 8, 9, 10 years, yeah. But you know, baseball is a gauntlet, you know, and it never stops. Once you grab, you know, it's like a train, you know, pulling out of the station in mid-February. You grab onto the caboose and pray you make it to October, and it just never stops. And you've got to play every day, and it takes a lot of ability, but it takes a lot of drive. You've got to really want this game, and you know, it doesn't look like it all the time when they're standing out there, you know, at noon on Saturday. But, you know, you can't escape this game once the season starts. And if you're going to be a Hall of Famer as a position player, you got to play every day. And so let's wait and see on those guys.
Right. Last thing before I let you go here, you know, how much are you personally looking forward to induction weekend, late July? You know, you've got Jim Thome, who you covered for 12 plus seasons with the Indians, and you know, your friend Sheldon Oker is going in and getting the Spink Award. How much is Hall of Fame enshrinement weekend going to mean to you personally covering it this year when you head out to Cooperstown?
It should be great, Joe. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really happy for Shelly. You know, we had nominated him a couple times. He got on the ballot. He's the first time he goes in on the first ballot too, just like Tomey. And
nice.
Tomey and him are good friends. So it's going to be a treat for him, for both of, you know, for Sheldon to be on the kind of go in on the same maybe the same class. You know, I don't think you could writers and baseball players, you can't compare the two, but I think it's going to be fun. It should be it's a great weekend. It's I was there when Ripken and Tony Gwynn got in. I was the president of the BBWA, and I got to introduce the writer who won the Spink Award, and it was really cool. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we're looking forward to it as well. Hoynesy, thanks for taking some time out to talk Jim Tomey and the Hall of Fame, and we will look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man.